activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
The time traveling robots and space podcast starts now.
It is Thursday, April 19th, 2012, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Time Traveling Robots in Space, number 29. I'm Dave Nelson, alongside Mr. Paul Swickard. How are you, Paul?
I am doing well. It's a good day, as always, for time travel robots and space. There's so much good stuff, I feel like, has been coming out of these particular genres recently.
This episode is jam-packed. We have a lot to talk about.
It really is.
This episode is thick.
You gave me, like, three different topics that we could like talk about for the entirety of the show.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do with myself now. So we will, but I will do my best to get to all of the important points. And some of them are epic.
Yes.
Like, you know, I don't want to oversell it, but stay tuned.
No, I think both me and you are on the same wavelength here. We're both looking forward to talking about one certain thing tonight, and it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely.
Okay, this is the show where we discuss all things time travel, robots, and space. In media and the news, Paul and I take a crack at each subject. Then we break out our recommendations for the week and ask the question. We have recommendation of the week and the question of the week. In the future, if you'd like to join us as we do this show live, we stream it on Spreecast.com Thursday night, 9 p.m. Central. That's 7 p.m. where Paul is, Pacific time. And for our Spreecast.com viewers, feel free to ask questions throughout the show. Either type them into the chat room or submit it where it says comment or question, and we'll include it in the show.
Sector 1, time travel.
All right, time travel TV shows are really popular in China right now. Did you know that, Paul?
Actually, yeah. I believe they mentioned that the suicide pact dealio thing with the girls, the young girls committing suicide in order to want to time travel, they blamed, I believe it was all the time travel media.
Yes. And that's what I'm about to talk about. Qing dramas, it's actually spelled Q-I-N-G, but it's pronounced Qing. And I'm sure it's spelled entirely different in Chinese. That's what they're called, and they've become very popular in China in recent years. In these stories, leading characters are modern people who travel back in time to the Qing dynasty, which is between 1644 and 1911. So that's like the last dynasty of China before modern day and communism. And these characters
from... So it was under imperialism, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it was. And then these modern characters play crucial roles in changing the course of history. These stories are popular mainly because of the number of historical characters, such as emperors, princes and princesses, to interact with or develop romantic relationships with. For example, the reign of Emperor Yong Heng has developed a very strong following for viewers. Fan clubs are beginning to appear because of this one storyline. One of the most popular time travel TV dramas is Palace Locks Heart Jade, in which a modern girl travels back to the imperial palace during the Qing dynasty and has a tangled web of relationships with different princesses who are vying for the throne. Despite receiving positive reviews, Palace Locks Heart Jade has created a public debate on whether it's permissible to fabricate history for entertainment purposes. And I seem to remember a story that we'd had on this last year sometime about how the government is starting to intervene with these, and they're kind of regulating them. They're starting to... make sure that history isn't changed too much because of these shows. Because if you're not careful, you can actually permanently change history just by putting that certain thing in the public, in the minds of the public. And then from that point forward, history is that way to them because of this certain show. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Okay.
A couple points. One, I'm very happy to be living in the country that I'm in. Point number one. Point number two, I don't know what exactly they're afraid of still. Like, okay, so they're afraid that people are going to actually start believing that, hey, I have, you know, this is not exactly how it happened. The last king, you know, the Qing dynasty was not the last dynasty. Of course, there are many other dynasties. We're currently in the Swick dynasty. I don't know. I made that last part up.
It's my own dynasty. This is awesome. You know what? I think the government might also be worried that people will think that life was awesome when it wasn't communist, when it wasn't communism in the country. Maybe they'll look back at this golden age and think, man, I wish it was like this again. Let's go back to this way. And maybe that they think that that undermines their government and undermines communism.
That could be. I mean, we do that in the States, of course. You know, like we have, everybody wants to, you know, talk about the romanticization. Is that a word? They want to romanticize the past. It's, they want to just, it's, oh, shoot, I lost my train of thought.
Well,
it's like, it's kind of like the good old days. It's like, you know, if for like social conservatives, the 50s were like the good old days because, you know, things were wholesome and things were right, even though that was just the public face. Mm-hmm. There were never any good old days ever, 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 ever.
Yep.
Like, you know, yeah, I could go on about that particular topic, but yes, good old days do not exist.
No, that's a very good comparison to our culture and our history, that everything looks better when you look back at it. Like, I grew up in the 1980s, and that's a popular decade to kind of romanticize now. It's kind of a popular decade to, you know, look at and go, you know, wasn't life great back in the 1980s, and we had this kind of clothes, and we listened to this kind of music, and Reagan, and then it was awesome. But it wasn't...
It always struck me as very distinct. Like, you know, you could point to it and say, yep, that was the 80s.
Yep. And you could. That's true. But still, to your point, not everything was great in the 1980s. And...
Yes. first thought, the Cold War. That was pretty bad.
That's one thing. So I think that's maybe one reason why the government is against these time travel shows and the way these shows change history. In fact, fearing a negative influence on children who are unfamiliar with history, the State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television, China's film and TV watchdog, has shown disapproval for some of the frivolous time travel TV dramas. A SARFT, that's the... State Administration of Radio, Film, and Television, circular issued in May 2011 suspended the broadcasting of some TV dramas which are too casual or sheer fabrication, which I think that's the story that we talked about last year.
Too casual.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're not, like, serious enough?
Yeah,
like,
I think, yeah. I think,
you know, like, everything has to be, like, real and gritty and all that.
And I think maybe... maybe not respecting history enough. Maybe that's another issue. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
I say...
I do not know, sir.
I say let them enjoy it.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
I don't like shunting the creativity of anybody. So it strikes me that this is... they're trying to cut this off. And, you know, if history is any indication, I don't think that these kind of... oppressive regimes, but they never work. Like, inevitably, the public is going to revolt at some point. Mm-hmm. It always happens. Always. You can take whatever previous government you like. Any oppressive regime, people don't like it.
No, uh-uh. They're never successful. And really, when you look at it, the Chinese government now is a lot more lenient. It's a lot more capitalist now than it ever has been, China. I mean, actually under communism. So it's not that bad, really, in the scheme of things. Like, comparing China now to China, like, in the 1960s, it's night and day.
Sure.
Night and day difference. They would never have been able to get away with these kind of shows back then. So consider themselves lucky, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I hope that the government can learn from their missteps.
Yes, let's hope. All right, so let's move on with time travel. What do you got for us?
We've talked about Looper a few times. This is the new upcoming film with one Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Oh, that's not how you say that. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Got it. And he dropped a couple of really interesting tidbits. This comes to us from IO9. And you and I had commented last week saying that, you know, we really hope that it didn't turn into some kind of less, some sort of lighthearted venture.
Watered down for the censors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and among other things. And he offered some pretty good insight that I, for one, reassures me. But this is, I'm quoting him now. He says, "Looper is, to be honest, some of the best work I've ever done as an actor. Rian Johnson, who wrote and directed Brick, is, I think, one of the greatest filmmakers going. Johnson actually has a lot in common with Chris Nolan and Steven Spielberg. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy, and I cannot wait for people to see that movie." So, off the top, I mean, he at least has a lot of confidence.
From what I've seen, from the trailer that I've seen, this movie looks really good. And it's funny that he would mention Christopher Nolan, because it kind of had that feeling a little bit. It reminded me of, like, the Batmans. And what's that? What's the dreaming movie? I always forget the name.
Inception.
Inception, yeah. It kind of had that feeling to it. So I'm really glad to hear that.
Well, he is actually going a bit into the trailer that you and I have talked about before, and I find what he said to be rather interesting. He said, "From that little trailer, you can hardly get it. They wanted to make a big banging action movie trailer, which is accurate because it's a big banging action movie. But when you actually see the movie and you really get a sense of what the prosthetic looks like, I'm really excited for people to see this character because it's nothing like me. It's my favorite thing as an actor to create a character that's other than myself."
All right. So I'm excited even more now hearing that, because it sounds like that was only the tip of the iceberg as far as this movie goes. We only saw a little bit of it.
That's what he's insinuating. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that an actor has oversold, you know, a movie just for overselling a movie. But, you know, we will see. I have high hopes.
Okay. I was really kind of worried when I first heard about this movie and when we first talked about it last year that they wouldn't be able to pull off the whole Joseph Gordon-Levitt looking like Bruce Willis. But that scene where they come face to face for the first time and they show Joseph Gordon-Levitt's eyes and Bruce Willis's eyes, they actually kind of look like each other. And I was kind of sold when I saw that scene.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree. That moment in particular was really cool.
All right. We do have some feedback on this discussion that we'll be talking about at the end of the show. Somebody actually commented on the website, a person that had actually seen this movie already in the early screenings of it. So some more insight.
Very cool.
Yeah, more insight later on in the program about Looper. I love that name.
Awesome. Breaking news.
Looper. It's
breaking news. Time travel lovers.
Looper. All right. So is that all you got, man, on this story?
That is what I have.
All right. Very excited. Before we move on to robots, we would like you to know that you can leave us feedback. Are you excited about Looper? Are you as excited as we are to see this movie, which is coming out this fall, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis? Well, if you are, let us know in a huge email, a huge expressive big word-filled email, or just maybe a three-word-filled email, like, this is going to be awesome. Something like that. Email galacticnetcast@gmail.com. You can call our voicemail and go, I can't wait for this freaking movie! The number is 805-328-3966, or leave a comment on the episode page at galacticnetcast.com. You can also reach out to us via Twitter, Facebook, or Google+, all linked to on the website at galacticnetcasts.com. And it's time for this.
Sector 2, Robots.
The marketing campaign for Ridley Scott's Prometheus continued this week with the release of another viral video for the fictitious Wayland Industries of the Alien universe. And I just found out today that the short film was directed by Ridley's son, Luke Scott. His son also does movies, and he directed this short. The first video was released a couple months ago, which showed Guy Pearce as Peter Wayland giving a futuristic TED Talk about the importance of robot technologies. The new clip features David, the android played by Michael Fassbender in the upcoming film Prometheus. The movie, which takes place prior to the events in the original Alien from 1979, will be in theaters on June 8th. And here is the link to the video if you want to see it. Have you seen it, Paul?
And why wouldn't you? Yes, I have.
What did you think? Your impressions, sir.
Way to go. Way to go, Michael Fassbender, is what I have to say.
Yeah.
He played, for those of you who don't know him, he played Magneto in the recent X-Men film. And he did a really good job. I think the android always has kind of played a pivotal role in the Alien series. Obviously the meltdown of the first one, and then Bishop in the second, and technically Bishop in the third as well.
Yep.
So yeah, I think they did the correct casting choice.
And I'm glad that they decided to include an android in this story as well, because, like you said, they've always been pivotal in the Alien universe, and it kind of bridges this. Mm-hmm. It bridges Prometheus. It's another strand of DNA, as Ridley Scott likes to always mention, between this and the Alien stories. And also, when you think about it, the Wayland Industries thing, that was also mm-hmm. part of the Alien universe too. So it's got a lot more in common with Alien than I think most people think, and it just looks like a kick-ass movie, and the more I see about it, and the more trailers and footage I see, the more excited I am to see Prometheus.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I would imagine that most people don't even realize that there's any connection to the Alien series in this film at all. Hopefully that will be made clear when they actually watch the movie. Yeah. Or, you know, for all we know, it may be completely like, it might be only service for people who actually know what to look for. It may, you know, it's, I'm at least putting out the possibility that we won't see anything even related.
No, I think we are going to see a xenomorph. And Brad, who's in the chat room, my host for the Alien Invasion podcast, we've talked about this before. And I think Ridley has said pretty much that you will see it in the last 5 minutes. You will see the connection.
Oh, okay. Did he go on record to say that? Because I hadn't heard that one way or the other.
He didn't come out and exactly say that, yes, you will see a xenomorph. But he's hinted enough that I'm kind of thinking that there is going to be the creatures from Alien at the very tail end of this movie. It's only going to be a very small part of it. And my theory is it involves the aliens were the byproduct of these other group of aliens, this other civilization that the humans are going out to find. Like, they were a byproduct. The xenomorphs were some experiment gone wrong or something like that. That's my theory.
That would make sense. Well, if you recall, in the first Alien movie, they did acknowledge the fact that the aliens where they found the original alien were not from the planet they landed on, nor were they from the, you know, planet that they returned to in Aliens. They were, it was a, as I believe Ridley put it, a derelict spacecraft that landed there. So they were just there. We don't know where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're right in the sense that I think we'll find the origin story for these creatures, whether it be, you know, an experiment gone wrong or their actual home planet or, you know, something to that effect.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be a very small part. And I think there's going to be a lot more. I think this movie is going to raise a lot more questions than it answers. I think it's going to, because they've already talked about a sequel to this film and not
yeah,
like,
I was gonna ask.
Yeah. And not like another alien, like involving the xenomorphs, but something that springs off of what they establish in this movie by itself.
Very cool.
So yeah.
Very cool.
Very
glad
awesome.
Ridley Scott is returning to properties that people like have a real passion for.
Yep.
Like, you know, this and Blade Runner, stuff like that.
Yep. All right. So moving on. This is the moment I've been waiting for, at least one of your stories. You've got a couple of them. They kept on they kept on coming at us hot and heavy this week, and you've got a couple of juicy ones here.
Indeed. All right. First things first. We'll start with the less. I don't even want less interesting. The more controversial. How about that? Even
right.
though I don't even think that's true. Anyway, moving on. New York college students attending an anti-war rally in Lafayette Square last month were convinced that they saw little flying machines that were not insects. So just marinate on that for a moment. At a protest, these, you know, college kids are saying that they saw insects that were not insects. They were saying that they were, in fact, robots. And yeah, Bernard Crane, a Washington lawyer, saw them too, and he said he'd never seen anything like that in his life. These sightings were among a group of sightings occurring recently in Washington and New York. Some observers think the unidentified flying objects may be a miniature high-tech surveillance tool set loose by the Department of Homeland Security to observe the protests. Others say that the devices were just dragonflies. By the way, I love the fact that they just threw that in there. Oh yeah, they might actually just be dragonflies. Who knows?
My theory.
Whatever.
My theory, and this is just one possibility. They were dragonflies, and the protesters were smoking. They were smoking something. And
yeah.
This is just.
I'm like, they're college students. What? Whatever, dude. Whatever.
Smoking the weed.
Yeah, space weed. Exactly.
Yes.
Right. And much to the surprise of everybody, I am sure, is that none of the various government organizations have admitted to deploying robot spy bugs.
Yep, of course. Why would you admit that?
Oh, there's a shock.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. There was oddly enough, there was a X-Files episode a long time ago that touched on something similar to this. It was really interesting. Like, basically, the idea was is that it didn't like it would. The idea was that we, in our current level of technology, how we choose to observe space is through things like probes, you know, things like remote cameras. So the thought behind it was, if these alien races, should they exist, are much more advanced than us, then chances are pretty good they would have sent something like that here first. So I believe they found something like a bug that wasn't really a bug, basically what these people are describing.
And the second, there was another link to another story about how this technology was being used, or how it was being developed, right?
Funny you should mention that, Dave. It was. And it was it was having to do with our good friends at DARPA that we love to talk about here on this show. And not to grease the wheels of conspiracy, but that link is no longer working.
Wow! It's the government, man. They don't want us to know.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, oh boy, that's not going to help anything at all. That, my friend, is story number one. So, welcome our robot insect overlords. I'm sure they're here to help.
Yes, I'm sure.
By the way, things are getting smaller for sure, obviously. Like, you know, tech is obviously getting a lot smaller. And eventually, I'm sure we'd be able to do this. But there are a lot of tech hurdles that would have to be overcome before anything like that became viable. For one, and probably the biggest one in my mind, is power. You need to be able to power that thing for a long enough period of time to actually get you valuable data. And that's a general problem with all robotics. When you have something that small, it makes it especially difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But that all had to do with the original link that Dave is talking about that has mysteriously vanished. Now, moving on to story number two. Dave is prepping some video chat, I see, so everybody can enjoy this.
Yeah, we have to watch this a little bit, but first do a little bit of the story, and then we'll throw in the video after a while.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to announce that we have robot prison guards. Not human prison guards. We have robot prison guards. And now, I realize that there are a lot of stuff that we have talked about on the show that has no chance of ever coming to actual fruition. I understand this. But yeah, this is apparently being tested in South Korea right now. Three robotic prison guards. And the idea is that the robots are, this is the claim by them, and we'll see in the video in just a second. The robot will monitor inmates' activities, reporting any inconsistencies or odd behaviors back to the main control center. Because the robots learn the common behaviors of inmates, they can prevent suicides, fights, and arson. Okay. So sentient is basically what you're talking about.
Okay, this would be a good time to play a little bit of the video. So here we go.
The world's first correction service robot allows for efficient prisoner management and takes on a number of simple tasks for guards while closing the communications gap between the prisoners and their guards. The correction service robot observes the prisoner's behavior, and when it detects any abnormality, it can record and transmit the situation in real time to the remote control center. The prisoners are protected from incidents such as suicide, arson, and assault.
Okay, I'm going to stop it, because for the audio listeners, they're not going to get anything out of this. We'll put the link in the show notes with the podcast. But it reminds me, Paul. It reminds me of a dystopian future movie. It has that feel, don't you think?
Oh, without question. Like, we are literally creating like a prison in a futuristic society where no one can, like, you know, it's all those prisons that people are terrified of that we'll have someday. Like super high performance, like prison guards that never make any mistakes, you know, blah, 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 blah.
No, it's the setup to a perfect movie. And I love how the music is so cheerful. It's like a typical demonstration video that you would see like at your office, you know, like for a new product or something like that.
Sure. Prison inmates got you down. Use our robotics. They're helpful. And they will not murder you in your sleep. By the way, the robots navigate by sensors placed in the ceiling. And the bots are somewhat, they say this, the bots are somewhat autonomous too, because if their power dips below 20%, they go to the nearest charging station. And it is developed by a company called Asian Forum for Corrections. And these four-wheeled bots will be tested for 1 month and cost nearly $300,000 each. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but the human prison guard was actually supposedly controlling the bot via an iPad.
Man, you know what? All these things that we feared and we've made fun of in movies and TV shows for years, it's all coming true. And I have a story. Mm-hmm. I have a story coming up to prove that fact. But that's coming up in a few minutes. I would love to get people's reactions to this. So again, going back to our feedback, you can email us galacticnetcast@gmail.com or call the voicemail number 805-328-3966. You have any final thoughts on this, Paul?
I have a lot of thoughts. We think that a robot, in an ideal world, a robot prison guard would be a really good idea because you could potentially, you know, regulate a prison without fear of putting a human in danger, or a guard's life, I guess I should say, potentially other prisoners as well. I have a family member who was a correctional, worked in a correctional facility. She wasn't a guard or anything, but prisoners are really smart, like really smart. They will, like, when you're given nothing but time and you have to sit in a room, that is their time to actually, like, think about things. And some of them have motive to actually try to figure out ways around the system, as it were. So if you have these robotic prison guards, I promise you it will not be long for someone to actually figure out where the holes are. For example, they mentioned that the way this robot moves is via, you know, some monitors in the ceiling. I would be curious to see how easily moved or baked those could be, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, off the top of my head, if they were to actually, like, I want to say detain a very expensive looking robot, they could probably come up with, you know, some pretty dangerous equipment. So, yeah, great idea. Be careful.
Well, okay. And I guess that's one of the reasons why they're being tested right now in a controlled environment. And in the video, they never showed them out with the general public. They only showed the robots going by cells that were locked up with prisoners inside. So maybe the plan is to only use these while the inmates are sleeping or inside their cells.
That would make, I guess pragmatically, that would make the most sense. Like, you wouldn't want to expose these things to actual, you know, prisoners proper, at least not yet. So, yeah, welcome to the future, ladies and gentlemen. It is looking fun.
Yeah, I know, exactly. And you know what? There's another story that I saw late today or earlier today about sex bots in the future that I'm sure that we'll be talking about next week on Time Traveling Robots in Space. It came too late to include on this show. But tune in next week.
Subscribe. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Subscribe, please.
Stay tuned next week. The question of the week, it's going to be a good one.
All right. So before we move on to space, if you would like to get more science fiction in your daily life, you know, if the time traveling robots in space are just not enough, you should subscribe to our mega feed at galacticnetcast.com. That will get you at least 3 shows a week. You've got us, you've got the Alien Invasion podcast, and you've got the Sci-Fi Film School podcast. Plus, we do specials. Starting this week was our first special. In fact, we recorded the Who Talk, the Doctor Who special, earlier tonight, which you should have been watching, because you might have learned something about Doctor Who, Mr. Not Knowing Anything About Doctor Who, Paul Swickard.
I probably would have. Actually, I should, you know, if I had, since I'm subscribed to the mega feed, I'm sure I will be able to get it.
There you go.
See? You see how we loop it back around there? It's genius.
Yeah, genius. You can be just like Paul and subscribe to the mega feed at galacticnetcasts.com. Just go to the contact subscribe tab and then either click on the iTunes logo or fill out the email form. You can also search for Galactic Netcast in iTunes or via your favorite podcatcher app of choice. I use Downcast. That is my favorite. So, get it either ways, and thank you for subscribing. All right, let's move on to our next subject, and that is this.
Sector 3, space.
All right, after a depressing weekend of watching a mini Star Trek marathon on HBO and missing space operas on TV, the Huffington Post's Chris Lopresto put together a list of 53 reasons why we need a new Star Trek TV series. 53 reasons.
So, now hold up. You were depressed because you saw Star Trek or because you missed it?
No. This guy that works for the Huffington Post, he was depressed that there wasn't any Star Trek on TV right now.
Okay.
That it's been so long that it's been since 2004 since we had Star Trek on a regular basis on TV. So he put together this blog post of 53 reasons why we should bring back Star Trek to TV. And here's just a few of the highlights. There are zero space operas on TV at the moment. How is that even possible? New episodes mean new social ideas to tackle. Gene Roddenberry would enjoy the series taking on new social and political questions of today, which I'm sure we could think of a few new ones. Because Star Wars is officially embarrassing, Star Trek finally has the chance to become hip. I have to agree with that point.
Yeah.
Star Trek?
Yeah, no. Go on.
I want your input because I know that you're a Star Wars fan. So go ahead. You got a smart-ass comment to make?
I am, in fact, a Star Wars fan. Having said that, I'm almost ashamed to say that. That is how bad the series has gotten. I'm almost ashamed to say that I am a Star Wars fan. Think about that. There was a time where everyone was a Star Wars fan, and now it's just depressing and embarrassing.
That's why, Paul, we need Star Trek on TV. Okay, here's a few more ideas. Or a few more reasons why we need to bring back Star Trek to TV. Star Trek The Academy Years, 90210 meets Star Trek. Boom. We just created a new franchise right there. I would actually like to see that because it would bring in a whole new demographic. Okay.
Dave, killing me. There is no freaking way.
No.
90210.
Hear me out. Hear me out for a second, Paul.
Present point. I will hear you as far as I can.
Okay. You have the whole 90210 demographic, all right? But you keep the show serious. Mm-hmm. You keep the show about the science, about, you know, space exploration, about what made the show great, but you have the younger kid hip aspect to it as well. Do you know what I'm...
No.
Okay. All right. Never mind then. And Brad...
No. Okay.
Brad agrees.
Okay.
He says...
In all honesty, having a show revolving around the Academy would be interesting for a bit, I think.
Yep.
But you have to understand what Star Trek... You have to understand a lot of what Star Trek is. If you're at the Academy, you're not in space. And you're not like exploring, you're not finding out new stuff all the time, or at least you would have to figure out a way to make that happen, you know, on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, they tried that on Deep Space Nine when they followed Nog on a couple of episodes. And it was kind of boring because you're right, it was all Earth-based stuff and it wasn't really that exciting. So you're right. I don't think that would really work as a series. How about this?
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Sure, go.
How about this? First openly gay Starfleet captain. That would work, right?
It would work.
Yeah, I think people
would,
accept that.
Well, that's the thing, is that I think that that's exactly what I was going to say, is people would accept it. I think it would be much less of a big deal now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether, you know, good, bad, whatever, I think that it almost would be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. You know, I live in a very loose state anyway, so maybe my coloring on this is a little bit jaded, no pun intended, but I almost feel like it's almost one of those points that is just people would just kind of shrug and go like, meh. You have some people who, you know, complaining about it, I'm sure, but I don't know. I think it would be a good idea. I don't think it would, like, you shouldn't, I guess my point is you shouldn't have the show revolve mostly around that point.
Yeah. Don't make the show about that. Make it a minor part of it. And they've never had an openly gay character on Star Trek, so maybe not make it the captain. You know, maybe make it the first officer. You know, maybe make it like,
point.
You know how Star Trek always has the alien or the android as a way of looking at humanity? Maybe make that character the openly gay one, and that just adds another twist to it. Another way to tell the story, but through his or
the
her
gay
eyes.
Android?
No.
Oh.
That's not my point.
Sorry.
I'm just saying that in that traditional role, we've had Vulcans and we've had Klingons and we've had androids. In the whole Data, Worf, or Spock, or you know, that one character on each show that they seem to always use to look at humanity through the eyes of this, through the outsider. So make the outsider the openly gay character on Star Trek. That's what I'm trying to say.
All right. That works.
Here is some more ideas or some more reasons why Star Trek should return to TV where it should be right now. More lens flares. I'm actually a fan of lens flares. So I could dig.
Well, so is J.J. Abrams. So it all fits.
A truly epic Starfleet versus Klingon battle on high definition. Yes and yes. Have you ever watched the final couple of seasons of Enterprise?
Of Enterprise?
Of Enterprise. Take out the fact that it's not that good of a series, but watch the last couple of seasons that was shot and presented in high definition, and the show looks beautiful. Watch it on a nice HD TV once, and you'll see his point on that. You know, seeing a battle in high definition, you know, Starfleet versus Klingon is freaking cool.
Absolutely.
All right, so there's a bunch more of these, and you can check out the whole list via the link that we threw up in the Spreecast window, or we'll have that as well in the show notes.
Hold up. You need to at least touch on the point you had right after that.
Okay.
That is worth discussing.
Oh, yeah. All right. An HBO Star Trek series with a similar tone to Game of Thrones, but in space. Lots of blood, sex, and talking. Yeah, no, that'd be perfect. You know what? Put it on an HBO or a Showtime. That way, you know, because they have less to lose. If you're putting it on a pay TV platform, the investors, the producers of the show have less to lose because they're not dependent on ratings, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, they are, but they're not. You know, they're less dependent on ratings, I guess, is the way to say that. Does CBS own Star Trek proper?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think this will happen, but I would appreciate a Star Trek with more of an edge to it. I think that it could go a lot of really cool places, and having it being a, you know, really high-quality television programming like at HBO, that would be, I would definitely get behind that.
Okay, Brad keeps on putting this link in the chat room, and I'm not going to read the headline, Brad, because
Well, that's fine because I can touch on at least one really cool thing in space.
Okay, go ahead. It's your turn anyways.
So you are obviously aware of the XPRIZE founder, Peter, I think his name is Diamandis, something like that. But anyway, the billionaire, he is getting together a group of billionaires for these. He is putting together a group for what's called, quote, for planetary resources. And it's supposedly he's joining prominent billionaires in order to create a new space venture with a mission to help humanity's prosperity. So it sounds like initially what they do is create a company that is almost like getting resources from other places other than Earth, basically. So asteroids, planets, things like that. And the list of people that he's gotten together for this thing is really impressive. Just to throw out a few here, Larry Page and Eric Schmidt, both from Google, filmmaker James Cameron, just because, you know, why the hell not, chairman and Intentional Software Corporation and Microsoft's former chief software architect, Charles, I think his name is Simone, founder of, I think it's called Sherpalo, and Google Board of Directors founding member K. Ram Shriram. I'm sorry if I'm butchering your names. And this was kind of a kicker. Chairman of Hillwood, the Perot Group, Ross Perot Jr.
Yep.
So you may recall Ross Perot being a presidential candidate at one point.
Yep. No.
And sure enough, I would assume this is his son. But yeah, he's gotten this group together in order to basically explore space and collect natural resources. This is the beginning of the Federation.
And
almost literally.
No, you're correct. You're exactly correct. And we're going to find out next Tuesday. They're going to have a press conference in Seattle next Tuesday, and we're going to find out what exactly they're doing. And like, you're right.
Right.
The initial suspicion is this is going to be asteroid mining, which is awesome. Right. We're going to be mining asteroids.
That's pretty sweet. But like Dave said, full details behind the company's mission is coming this Tuesday, April 24th. So obviously, I'm sure that you and I will be discussing it the following following show.
No, definitely.
But yeah, that it's going to be a long. I mean, they'll need a lot of billionaires because it's going to. I would imagine it's going to be a long, long time before this company sees a profit, assuming it survives. I think it's pretty awesome that the group of people that they've assembled here.
But they said adding trillions of dollars to the global GDP. Trillions of dollars.
That's what he said. That's the claim. Adding space exploration and natural resources to add, quote, trillions of dollars to the global GDP. Okay.
So
how do you plan on doing that, good sir?
There are a lot of asteroids floating around our solar system. So there is the potential for a lot of minerals and precious stones and things that could be used on this planet floating out there in space. So this has a lot of potential, and I'm looking forward to learning more about this next week. And like you said, this is a very impressive list of millionaires. There's a lot of money in this group of people.
They made a point. These are all actually billionaires.
Yeah. No.
So there you go.
It's interesting that you picked this and I picked this. Like, I had it too?
No, I didn't. Did you pick this story as well?
Yeah. No, I had two stories.
Oh.
And my second one was this, but then you happened to have it too, which I'm glad you did. So yeah, this is the biggest story of the week as far as space goes. And this is not the story, Brad, that you put in the chat room is not. I'm not going to read it. You keep on posting it. I'm not going to read it. It is dirty. I'm sorry.
Well, dude, I'm gonna click on it. What the heck?
Well, you can click on it. Just don't read it, please. It is dirty. I'm not gonna. Do you think it's too dirty?
That's fine.
Think it's too dirty?
No, it's not. It's not too dirty. But, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know what the hell we're talking about, go to. I don't know.
No, we'll.
I don't know what you search
okay,
for.
Okay, we'll put. We will put this in the links in the show notes, just so because we've been teasing this for the last 10 minutes talking about this story that we're not talking about. So we've got to put the link in the show notes. So it'll be there with the podcast.
The headline is worth the laugh.
Yeah, it is. All right. Oh yeah. And Brad brings up a point that it's also posted on the Galactic Netcast Facebook page. Thank you, Brad. Appreciate that. And by the way, Brad's been doing a great job posting stuff on the Facebook page. Thank you very much, sir. Before our recommendations, we do them. Don't forget, you can listen to this show along with all the other Galactic Netcast show via the Stitcher Smart Radio on your iPhone, your Android phone, your BlackBerry. And now it's available in BMW vehicles, Android tablets, and the Nook. And I saw the other day that it's also available in Ford vehicles. So Stitcher is definitely widening their footprint out there on devices, and it's just an easy way of getting your shows, your music, your podcasts. It's an app that you put on your device, and what you do is go to stitcher.com/galacticnetcasts, enter the promo code galacticnetcasts for your chance to win a $100 cash card. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. All right, recommendation time. And I don't know if you noticed, Paul, but my last few have been corresponding with the shows that Scott Johnson and Tom Merritt have been talking about on their Autopilot podcast.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, but thankfully...
Is this following suit?
Go ahead.
Well, is this following suit? Is this doing the same thing?
Yeah. This is, but this will be
your recommendation.
Yeah, this will be the last one for a while because next week they'll be talking about Mission Impossible. So this is the last. This is the last thing that pertains to our show that they'll be doing. So my recommendation this week is the TV show Quantum Leap, and the pilot episode, which is Genesis Part 1 and 2. And this is, like I said, the pilot episode of the series, which premiered on September 26th, 1989. The series eventually ran for 5 seasons, finally ending in 1993, starring Scott Bakula as Sam Beckett and Dean Stockwell as Al. So part one goes like this. Although the project Quantum Leap isn't quite ready, Sam Beckett doesn't listen to the supercomputer Ziggy, hops into the accelerator, and leaps into the body of Tom Stratton, an Air Force test pilot about to attempt a dangerous flight. Sam finds his memory Swiss cheesed, with only enough left to know that he's not where or when he belongs. According to Sam's friend and partner, Al, who appears to him as a hologram nobody else can see, Al explains that the project has gone awry, and in order to leap out of the pilot's body, Sam must successfully fly the X-2 to Mach 3, which, according to historical records, ended in a fatal crash. That was part one. Part two, as Tom Stratton, Sam confronts his wife and prevents her from having a premature birth. That is what he was sent to do, not fly the X-2. His real mission was to prevent Tom's wife from dying during childbirth, because Sam knew about a way of saving the baby and a way of saving her that he knew from being a doctor in the future. So that's why he was sent back. Because you've seen Quantum Leap before, right, Paul?
Yes, sir.
So you know the concept.
I do indeed. It was one of my favorite shows as a kid. I mean, you know, when, like you said, the show ended in, what, 93?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was 14. It was, I was still fairly unfamiliar concept of the way they ended that show. Like, I was just like, I was just kind of shocked. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Spoiler alert for people that haven't watched Quantum Leap. The last episode, you think that he's going to get home, because what happens right. during the whole series is every time he leaps into a new body, into a new time period, he thinks it's got the potential of leading him back to where he started from, back to his own body
right.
in his own life.
Well, it's in the opening credit. Like, yeah. you know, he's like, every single time he leaps, he hopes the leap is going to be the leap home. It's, yep. They say that every single episode.
And that's what you think is going to happen on the final episode, but it doesn't.
It's right. It doesn't. It just doesn't.
Which
it was just like, oh.
I wonder if they did that because they thought that maybe they would do like a TV movie or do a feature film one day and be able to continue the story. But then at the same time, you could continue the story with him jumping back home. You could just start over again.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Scott Bakula is still one of my favorites. He does good work.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, Enterprise is not good.
You know, you can argue that fact. I thought Enterprise wasn't too bad. I mean, it wasn't the best Star Trek series, and you could say that it was the worst, but it was still Star Trek, and it still carried on the story of Star Trek, you know? It wasn't terrible. It wasn't like
no.
What's a really bad show I can compare it to? You know,
and my point was he was good in it.
Yeah.
You know, like no, not to besmirch Mr. Bakula. He was a good actor in what was otherwise a mediocre show.
Yep. Exactly. So there you go. The next episode didn't air until June 15th. So it took NBC like 3 or 4 months to decide to pick this show up. And you can watch most of Quantum Leap on Netflix and Hulu. For some reason, I looked on Hulu first, or no, I looked on Netflix first, and there's only certain episodes available. There's ones that are disc only, and this was one of them that was disc only. And I went onto Hulu and I saw the same thing, but then I did a search again for this episode, and a link that was on Google took me to the page, and I was able to watch it. So I don't know what the hell happened. It was just a cool coincidence. But
All right.
I must have gamed.
All right, cool. Well, congrats.
I must have gamed the system somehow. But anyways, that is my recommendation, Quantum Leap, the pilot episode. Check it out today. What is your recommendation, Paul?
My recommendation is a hesitant recommendation, but recommendation nonetheless. I am recommending the book 1984. People have been talking. This is kind of like one of those books that you have to read in school, which was why my hesitation was directed at not recommending it. Because I remember, did you have to read this in school?
Yeah, it was like one of the.
I did.
It was one of the only ones. No, never mind. Forget it. Forget I even was talking there. Go ahead. Continue.
No worries. And yeah, the thing is with this book is it gets a lot of, like, people have really come to use it as synonymous with a lot of dystopian society type stuff today. Like, whenever you hear the phrase Big Brother, you know, Big Brother is watching, that is from this book, and people still use it today, and people use it for all kinds of very, you know, socially relevant things. Like, now more than ever, you know, this book was written in, I think it was first published 49.
Okay.
So right after the Second World War. And I think that's right, isn't it? Sorry if I have my dates wrong, historians. But he had a really interesting vision of how the world would look in, you know, 50 years. And he wasn't right, obviously. He wasn't right about a good chunk of it. but he was about very specific points. And it was just interesting the way that kind of shaped up. It was interesting to see his vision of it versus where it actually went. So, yeah, the idea of constantly being monitored, of, you know, having a very oppressive, again, an oppressive regime, you know, wanting to keep the economic and, you know, political power to themselves while the masses are just doing what they're told. That is basically the heart of the book. But yeah, it's just I recommend this simply for the idea that you can look back on it and say, you know, this is, you know, this was the real 1984 versus what a man's vision of 1984 would be.
Yeah, there's a big difference between the two, between the real and the made up. Huge difference. I would have to say,
but, you know, I mean,
okay, go ahead.
It happens all the time, you know, like we're in a place now where people have had ideas about which direction our society is going for a long time. So some of them were right. Others were really wrong.
Mm-hmm. No, most
off the top of my head, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And 2015.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that coming up. But I wanted to say real quick that most authors and most storytellers that try to tell a story about the future get it wrong. On the Sci-Fi Film School on Monday, we watched a movie called The Dark Side of the Moon, and it was made in 1989, and according to the movie, in 1993, the shuttle Discovery was going to the moon to mine minerals. And this is one of my pet peeves about films, is they always do this. They always set it too close into the future, and they always make it more awesome than it really is going to be, because it was only 4 years away. How could you make the future that awesome, which was only 4 years away? So
sure.
That's...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're going to have the future is going to be cooler in 4 years, but we're not going to have flying cars in four years. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. All right. So your recommendation, George Orwell's 1984. There's a movie out there, too, based on the book.
Yeah, I saw the movie as well, and it's okay. It's a little, I don't know. Watching it is a bit more creepy, I feel. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, that wasn't what I thought at all, but that's been wrong.
Yeah, it's really dark, depressing, old looking. Like, it makes 1984 look really, really old, because they're like using, it seemed like, World War II technology, kind of, in this supposed 1984.
Yeah, they may have done that on purpose. But yeah, the movie does not, like, aesthetically, it does not look very good.
And there's a lot of nudity, too. And the nudity of the woman, she needs to shave. In the movie 1984. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't say that.
But of course,
but you're not going to hear a disagreement either.
But of course, they were rationing things, so razors were really hard to come by. So I can understand, kind of. Stay classy, Dave.
Yeah, exactly.
Brad says.
Stay classy.
All right. On that note, before we ask the question of the week, before we wrap up the show, got to remind you that you can go to the website and get links to our social networks. We are strong and proud on the social networks. We have a Facebook page, Twitter, and Google Plus accounts. We have links to those at our website, galacticnetcasts.com. Also on the website, a bunch of sci-fi news and new ways to support the network. We have three reoccurring monthly payment options, $3, $5, and $7. All very affordable. And we thank you for your support of Galactic Netcasts.
Indeed.
And again, go to galacticnetcast.com and click on donate for those payment options. All right. So you picked the question of the week. So go ahead and ask it, Paul.
I did indeed. Of the three Back to the Future movie time periods, that being 1885, 1955, or 2015, if the DeLorean were to break down, where would you rather be stuck?
All right.
Those answers again, 1885. So basically the Old West.
Yep.
1955,
okay.
Which is the land of, you know, crazy people. and 2015, which is the land of, you know, multiple ties and inside out pants.
Okay, so this is a tough question because...
Now, I should clarify here. I am not talking about the 2015 that will actually occur in 3 years. I am talking about the 2015 that the Back to the Future era portrayed.
I'm glad that you...
There's a big difference.
Yeah. I'm glad that you clarified that because I was thinking it's only a few years away, so what's the difference between now and then, really, when you think about it? But, you know,
well, and, you know, hydrating pizzas and fax machines in every room. It's it's awesome. Well, hoverboards.
Brad brings up a good point. Hoverboards. I'm going to say 2015 just because it's the future, man. And I love future stuff. I love science fiction stuff. So there's all that cool future tech that was in the year 2015 of the movie, like the hover spaceboards, the hovering skateboards, the sneakers, the automatic sneakers, which they've made, by the way, not exactly the way in the movies, but pretty close. You can get them if you want. But my answer is going to be 2015. That's where I want to get stuck. All right. So what's yours?
I want to touch on this just really quickly. You know, people, I've brought it up many times, you know, I want my hoverboards. I want my, you know, floating cars, things like this. But we're really far away from the society that they portrayed in large portion because we still have lots of lawyers. We need less lawyers.
Yes, I agree with that.
No offense to lawyers. Me personally, yes, I got to go with 1885 because I love I like the Old West vibe. I'm a very big Old West fan. However, had I like actually been born in that era, I'm pretty sure I'd be dead. So thank you for not putting me in that era. But if I were to choose, I would like to have gone back there.
Wait a second. Did you have some kind of like illness that wouldn't have been curable back in 1885?
Well, I have asthma.
Okay.
And, you know, it's kind of a coin flip whether I would have lived or not. But I also got pneumonia when I was like 5.
Oh, wow.
And that in combination with asthma would have been probably pretty bad.
Yeah.
Especially back then.
Yeah. Plus there's consumption, that disease that always gets mentioned in Old West stories. People always have consumption.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have no idea what that is. I just know that they're always coughing. And there's always lung issues, so go ahead.
It's like black lung or something like that. I don't know what it is, or maybe like tuberculosis.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
All right.
If you're from the Old West, let us know.
Leave us feedback. The voicemail is 805-328-3966. Speaking of that, if you have an answer. If you really have a strong feeling as to what year you want to be stuck in Back to the Future eras, let us know. Again, that voicemail number is 805-328-3966, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, or leave us feedback on the actual website at galacticnetcast.com, which we got some feedback this week. You ready, Paul?
Oh, awesome. Yes, absolutely.
And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier with Looper. Andrew made a comment on our discussion about Looper, and this is a bit of a spoiler, what he has to say. So if you don't want to be spoiled, it's not a huge spoiler, and you can kind of guess from watching the trailer, but if you want completely spoiler-free movie experience, then turn off the podcast now. Okay, now we can continue. Andrew says, the payment is attached to each body they send back. Like we saw gold in the scene that we saw in the trailer. Bruce Willis gets away by turning around and his younger self shoots the gold bricks. So remember, as soon as he jumped back to the past, he turned around and his younger self shot him, but it bounced off the gold. So that's what happened. Andrew says, I saw it at a screening a few months back and read the screenplay numerous times before that. You won't be disappointed. And he put a smiley face. Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely.
We talked about when the story about this movie first came up last year, we were like, Because in the story, it mentioned all these really, really early screenings. And we're like, oh my God, that's it seems really early for screenings. But apparently Andrew was part of one of those screenings. So awesome. Kind of want to be you, yeah. Andrew.
Good times.
All right. So I think this is officially the oldest, or oldest. We are older than we were when we first started this podcast. The longest podcast that we've had. So we should probably wrap this up. Don't you think, Paul?
If we have to, sure.
Yeah. All right. Might as well. That's going to do it for this Galactic Netcast, the Time Traveling Robots in Space number 29. And again, thanks for joining us. We'll see you soon, Paul.
Stay classy, Dave.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.